Open to Comics.
Episode 207. This week, we talk about how to be happy. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast.
Well, I know we want to just like get right into it, but I just want to take a second. I'm doing a new show with friends of mine, Brian and Nick, about Survivor. We're calling it Outwit, Outplay, Outcast, which is a play on the slogan of Survivor. I know everybody shits on Survivor a little bit because it's like the original reality show, but it's been going on 30 seasons and I really like it. And hopefully this is going to be really fun. Our intro music is a MIDI version of Outcast music, because it's Outwit, Outplay, Outcast. Anyway, it's really stupid. It's going to be really stupid and really fun. And that should come out on Thursday or Friday. It'll probably be on iTunes a week after that, or you can go to outwitoutplayoutcast.com. That's really the best URL I could get. I tried ooshow.com, and that was taken.
Ooh show.
That is
ooh
great.
Ooh show. So I don't know. I'll try ooh cast or something, or ooshow.net.
But you can't change it now. You told everybody.
We can have three or four. If you go to atomicpoweredsupercast.com, that will take you to Welcome to Comics.
Or jollyandy.com.
You could have hella URLs. Yeah. Jollyandy.com will take you there too. Oh, fuck. I got to change that. It has the old show name. Yeah, I got to fix that. Anyway, yeah, outwitoutplayoutcast.com. Go there if you like Survivor. If you don't like Survivor, try watching it. The great thing about reality TV is that there's no backstory. It's not like you have to watch the first 29 seasons.
There is backstory. I remember I tried to watch it with you, and there was like the dragon guy.
Oh, that's
the guy from Boston.
Okay, that's because...
You had to give me backstory.
Well, it's because we started watching Heroes versus Villains, which is nothing but people who have played before. This is like all new people. So there's none of that. There's none of that backstory of how they've played before or whatever. None of that. Okay.
So you just lied to our audience. So I just want you to know that.
Yeah, but I'm talking to you, David. I lied to you. Our audience just happens to be there listening. Anyway, let's get right into this comic.
You're a liar because you lied to me.
I'm a lying liar, liar face. Let's get into this comic.
This week's comic.
Lies make me very, very happy. Anyway, yeah, we need to get right into this one because there's a shitload to talk about here.
Yeah. I want to just really briefly say why I chose this one for this week.
Okay.
And it was because I saw the cover on Amazon and said, that's really pretty.
Because it's got the flower in the...
Yep, that's how it happened.
This must be not at all what you were expecting.
You know, it was, actually. Like, oh, yeah. I looked at some of the art and I was not surprised by what I got, I don't want to say this was a refreshing change of pace, because that implies I might have felt like everything else we've been reading has gotten boring, but I did like this. I thought it was, like, a really interesting change from what we normally read.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's usually what happens when we do these best of series, especially with the graphic novels. There's always something that completely just takes you by surprise, that's really good in a new way that you didn't realize comics could be good. But I'm on the fence with this one. A part of me wants to say that I really kind of connected with this and thought it was a really good, like, study of a lot of different emotions and how people feel, but just in general, like, different shades of anxiety. But then the other part of me wants to say this is really just frou-frou emotional junk. Like, I'm so torn between loving it and just going, meh.
That seems interesting that you would call it frou-frou emotional junk, because considering, like, you studied psychology and stuff.
Yes. Look, anybody else out there who has a psychology degree, can agree with me. The number one problem with most people's lives is that they don't get enough sex. That's really, like, that's what half of everything comes down to. Unless, of course, you have, like, a psychological disorder, like something's wrong in your brain. That's obviously different. But for most day-to-day things, they could just be fixed overnight with half more sex.
But, like, what about people who, this is going to turn into, like, a psychology podcast if I ask you the next question. I was thinking, like, but there's, like, scales of emotional, or not emotional, like, psychological problems, right? Like, some are worse than others.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you...
And then
you,
there's levels of depression, right? Like, some people are more depressed than others, well, or it manifests in different ways.
Yeah, if you have clinical depression or, like, generalized anxiety disorder, those are disorders, those are brain imbalances, one or another. And that's not fixed with just more sex. I'm talking more just, like, the, I'm really stressed, I've had a month of shitty work, and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, you know, there's a bunch of stuff you could do at work different or better to improve your emotional state, but really, you could also just have more sex, and that would fix everything.
Well, those people obviously don't have a psychological disorder then,
no,
right?
No, exactly.
They're just
exactly.
upset about something.
Well, they're people who need therapy to improve their lives or have just even a sounding board. Like, really, like, anyway, yeah, you're right. This is totally going off track. But psychiatry
I mean,
is the
I think
same
we could spend a lot of time talking about this, right? But
yeah.
I think it's not.
Brain doctors and body doctors are the same thing. If you have clinical depression, then that means that you got your arm blown off. And if you, like, just feel sad all the time, just a little bit, then that's like having a common cold or like you're having a tough month. Like, you can get sick and get cured, and there's people who have problems that can't get cured, in air quotes. Anyway, most of that can't get cured, this is frou-frou emotional junk. And, like, part of me wants to say that this is just, like, frou-frou emotional junk, but then there's stuff in here that makes me go, like, yeah, I kind of feel that way, too, about a lot, like... Like, the first two, like, In Our Eden and Nita Goes Home, those two, I was like, this is really good. I really can really connect with a good chunk of this. But, I don't know, as I kept reading, I was like, wait a second. Emotions.
You're allowed to have emotions, Andy. It doesn't make you less of a man.
I know, but I want my emotions to punch things.
Some of it was crazy, like, abstract, too.
Yeah.
Like, what is it, the one with the rabbit? That was...
Yeah, oh.
I liked the rabbit one a lot, 7 sacks.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not sure... I guess the question is, so the collection of these pieces is called How to Be Happy.
Yeah.
Like, how does that fit in? Is it part of the theme, or...
You know,
is there something there?
I feel like it's not an instruction. It's not supposed to be like instructions on how to be happy. I mean, there's the note from the author at the beginning.
Yeah, she even says.
Yeah, it's not that.
I think it's maybe like a showcase of people with different, you know, people have some kind of, everybody has some kind of problem. Maybe it's anxiety or.
Some kind of hang up.
Yeah, they have a hang up and it kind of is a little snapshot of how they go about trying to be happy. I don't know. I mean, In Our Eden, I think, is a good example of that, because the main Adam, Daryl, as we learn that his name actually is, he is doing this, like, moving out into the wilderness and being, like, a nature hunter-gatherer guy in order to be happy. Like, that's one of the things that helps him subside his anger management issues, right?
Yeah.
And it's a struggle for him to be happy. And I think Nita Goes Home is another good example of that because, you know, her idea of happiness, at least as far as she can tell, is to be out in this, like, farming community under the dome, right? Mm-hmm. Where everything's natural and organic and stuff. But then she goes home to visit her dying father and she realizes that there's things in her life or in her past life that also make her happy, like the tacos and, you know, the...
Her niece, you know?
Yeah, her niece and playing in the little river thing.
Yeah, I think that In Our Eden... No, not In Our Eden. I think in Nita Goes Home, that one, like, really struck me. Because we live in a really urban area, and I work in downtown San Jose. And there's a lot of homeless people there. And, like, I feel a lot of this comic every day because I grew up in a rural area. I didn't grow up around homeless people. And I've been to a lot of parts of this country where, like, the idea of a homeless person is, like, not offensive per se, but the, like, why doesn't somebody give him a home? Or why doesn't somebody do something for him? Like, that's not right. That whole thing, like, if a homeless person's around, then it's not right for you to leave them homeless. And, like, I take the bus into work, and I ride with homeless people, and people who have mental issues are riding the bus with me, too. And part of me wants to be like, I should just move away. I should move to a place where there aren't homeless people, where there aren't the problems that this city has. I should just, like, move to Montana or like, rural Idaho or someplace nice and scenic. But that, like what Nita says, or not Nita, Mona, Nita's sister, what she says, those problems aren't going to go away. You know, they're going to stay. The problems are still going to be there. They're still going to be affecting the people that you love and know who are still there. And, like, the other thing, there's also a big mural that I walk by every day. And this is gonna tie back in, I promise. And on the left end of the mural is, like, this giant factory with big SUVs and clouded smoke. And, like, there's a river that's muddy and disgusting and filled with gunk. And even, like, a skull, right? A human skull. And, like, the river kind of goes along towards the right side of this mural. And there's, like, a big tree in the middle. And after the river passes the tree, there's, like, this beautiful agrarian society of just, like, people picking fruit and stuff. And the message is really clear that, like, being in the city, being in this urban area is really, like, toxic and harmful, and it's not meant to be that way. It's meant to be this way kind of a thing. But, like, I always get offended when I see that poster because there's not work out there. Everybody, I'm sure, would love to go live on a farm, but that doesn't pay very well. That doesn't raise your family. Like, I get it, and I also fundamentally disagree with it. The same way I do with Nita and Mona. Like, I see both sides of their struggle.
Well, the thing about, like, that kind of... there's nothing wrong with that ideal, but the problem is that it's unrealistic, right? You're never going to get everybody to do that.
Yeah.
And there just isn't enough space. There's too many people for everyone to be a farmer, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm glad that there are... It's good that there are places like that for people who want to do that kind of thing. It's good that the opportunity exists for some people, but they shouldn't accept. But those people shouldn't assume that that's what everybody else wants or needs. I think a lot of them, you know, a lot of people think that that would solve all our problems as a civilization, right? Human society. But the truth is, and they're not wrong about some things. You know, there is a pollution problem and all that kind of stuff, but there has to be, people have to live the lives that they want to live still, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't be, it's a form of oppression, I guess, if you force somebody to do something they don't want to do, like be a farmer. If Nita tries to force her ideals on Mona, Mona's gonna probably be unhappy, right?
Well, Mona can't. You know, well, like, yeah, I go back to that thing in the grocery.
Well, right, she can't go live that life. And, you know, and who's to say that that would make her happy? Because she doesn't necessarily seem like she's unhappy in the city.
Yeah, she seems like she's happy with her father and her child and the freaking Pico Taco. Pico Taco out in that dome.
And we even see Nita eat it, you know.
Well, I mean, Nita also says, you know, remember back when we were happy when we were kids. And twice, like, Mona says, you know, you called this a dystopian nightmare. And Nita's just like, I was 19. And then the dad says, you know, you called this place America's asshole. And she's like, I was 19. But when she comes back, she still has, like, these internalized ideals about what makes people happy. Like, oh, these are real berries. You know, these will make you happy. I liked this story because it took those ideals and challenged them. And, you know, you see her going back and she's, like, eating the berry in the last panel. And you can tell, like, she was thinking back to when she was 19 and believed these things, and maybe she's realizing that it's not all there, but I don't know how I feel about it either, because she was happy, and what happened is it's not like Mona and Michael force their ideals on her, but, you know, she was confronted with them, and they made her realize that what she believed wasn't necessarily, you know, something that creates happiness either.
Mm-hmm. And I think she was confronted with the fact that she, that to a degree she was, you know, she was happy there in the city for a time as well. I mean, before she was 19, you know, she, you know, she has this, she had the opinion about that her, the society was a dystopian nightmare and America's asshole and stuff, but she excuses it, right? And she basically, by saying, she says, oh, I was 19, that's saying that, that makes me think that she doesn't feel that way anymore. Because she, because after being apart from the situation, she can remember, she now realizes that there was happiness in that. Mm-hmm. And when she goes back to her city, or back to the farming community in under the dome, she probably experiences some sadness too, because she has to make a compromise, right, and give something up to go and live in her chosen place, right? I mean, she can't have it all.
Yeah, and there's,
even if her family moves to the countryside with her, there's not going to be Pico Taco, right?
Well, and there's also the whole like thing of different class status in this, you know, which is pretty clear. Like, Nita, at the end of the day, gets to go back to her dome, her protected community, where everything is nice and clean. She doesn't have to have her toxo suit on. They can eat real berries. There's no, you know, there's no pollution or any of that, and everything's Gaia-grown. Like, there's definitely, Nita lives in a different class of society than Mona does. And to a certain extent, when she comes home, I think she still does have the same belief that that place is bad, right? Like, she says things like, I remember this house being bigger. And she says, maybe not with that tone, but she says, I remember the house being bigger. I remember this, I remember that. And like, and she's seeing it almost as worse. And then when people confront her, she's embarrassed at how she's judging them for being in a lower class. You know, I definitely get that out of this comic too, that like, I was 19, please excuse me being a complete ass about you trying to make a life where you are. You know, like, Mona and her kid probably can't afford to move into the dome. They can't afford berries. Not real berries, anyway. And it's like,
I liken it to the whole, like, organic versus not organic thing, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's basically what it is. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it seems like a lot of themes in this book touch on basically trends that have become really, really, really prevalent, at least from what I've seen and people I know and the corners of the internet where I lurk, among like the upper middle class. Usually, at least as far as I know, like white people who, like, I know a couple people and I've read a lot of blogs where they're like, if you want to travel the world and you're not doing it and you're not like quitting your job for 2 years just to go around, then you're ruining your life. And it's like, yeah, but some of us can't afford that. Or if you don't eat organic, you're damaging the planet and disrespecting your body. And it, again, you know, some of us can't afford that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I feel like it's pretty clear some of this, and who am I to judge author intent, right? But it seems like a lot of this is also touching on this, like, trend today where people are kind of taking up various diets or lifestyles that they, you know, that they really believe in them, but at the same time they're kind of pushy about them and judgy at times. Come off that way, right?
I will see that joke online about, like, the first rule of CrossFit is you always talk about CrossFit kind of thing. And it's like, I don't judge people for wanting to do exercise and wanting to improve their lives, but like Jen said, it's when they get pushy that it becomes annoying and then becomes a joke, right?
Yeah, I don't need 10 Instagram pictures a day of you
doing
CrossFit.
Like, I'm sure CrossFit is certainly, like, a totally, it's a great exercise regimen, program, if that's what you want to do. But like anything, it's people don't appreciate being preached to.
I have the perfect example. There's
and I'm sorry, CrossFit fans. I didn't mean to pick on you. I just thought about that.
There's this ad that runs on Hulu for fucking Reebok of all things, right? And it starts with like a dude like flipping a tire down a back alley, and it cuts to like all these people doing hardcore things. Like this person did so many push-ups, his hands are raw, and there's all this awesome stuff. And it's like, this is for those people out there who push themselves to be better and all this and that, you know? And then at the end, it shows, like, this woman in, like, a sports bra and shorts, like, jumping through fire, and it says, be more human. And I'm like, so you're telling me that because I'm sitting on my couch watching Hulu right now, I'm less human than that person?
Yes, exactly.
I'm less human because I'm not, like, out fucking flipping tires and shit down an alleyway?
No, yeah,
I'm
dude, sorry. I'm judging get out, you. Get out
my there. Human experience is just as valid as that crazy motherfucker's.
No, it's and, not, dude. Go get out there and jump through some
and
fire.
By the way, I am enriching my own life philosophically through culture and literature and storytelling, and I would argue I'm more human than that motherfucker who's just like, yeah, I'm buff, CrossFit. Like, that guy is not getting the entire human experience. He's getting his own experience with his own weights by himself or herself. Anyway,
I think,
like,
you
it's,
know,
it's that whole thing where, like, just, you're right, the whole sanctimonious piece of it.
Well, see, like, I love the internet, obviously, right? I mean, if there was no internet, we wouldn't be doing this right now. I mean, we might be talking about comics, but not posting our conversation on the internet.
We probably wouldn't talk about this comic either.
Yeah, but, so, like, I have a big problem with social media. I like social media. I'm not gonna, like, knock it. I think it's fine. But, you know, the thing about social media, and I think some other people probably experience this problem too, is that the only thing people ever post is the great things that are happening in their lives. Like Jen mentioned the thing, like, why aren't you out traveling and quitting your job and doing all these great things? And, you know, people see, that's what people see. And then it can sometimes make people feel bad because they're not doing that kind of thing. But then at the same time, it's like, they're going to post things that are great about that's going on in their life too. And it creates this like bizarre, unrealistic window into the lives of other people.
Yes. And dude, that my favorite short story in this whole thing, I think, is an allegory for that exact thing that you're describing. It's the one where it's the pages are pink and the woman has this Belgian guy who sculpted a statue of her, but it's of her best self.
Yeah.
That one, I think that's what this is exactly about. It's just like, I'm going to have this self-image of what I would be if I had more time and if I had this is who I want myself to be. And she's making this statue. And then my favorite part is she sits and admires her idealized self on the statue. And for me, like, that is, like Jen said, author intent, who knows, whatever. But I don't think author intent matters. For me, that was a really powerful, like, three-page allegory for the way people will craft an image of themselves and throw it on the internet. And I've seen employees at my work scrolling through their own Facebook page, admiring, almost like admiring themselves.
Oh, wow.
Like, just the idea that I'm choosing to put up these good things about me, and I will untag or remove the parts of myself that I don't like from my Facebook page so that people will only see this idealized self and then they can sit and admire it like I do. And it, like, oh, those pages are like, yes, thank you. I don't care if it's what you meant to do, Eleanor Davis, but that is exactly why I'm really ambivalent about Facebook.
I think Facebook can be fun, and it's a great tool for it can be a great tool for communications and organizing things. Like, I mean,
we use it for our gaming group.
Yeah, we use it for our gaming group. We communicate with each other when we plan out stuff for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, Facebook is great, but I think that it's hard to remember that it's like a layer. It's just a layer of people's life. It's just the peak. It's just a little peek into that. It's not the end all be all, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I do it too. Like, I, one of my hobbies outside of comics and stuff is like amateur racing. And I post pictures and stuff from when I go to the track and things like that.
And they're awesome.
And they are awesome. I think it's a lot of fun. I like to share those with people because I think I look really cool driving my car around a racetrack.
Dude, there's a badass one of you from Laguna Seca that I swear to God I took a screenshot of like the exact same angle in Gran Turismo, but you were actually in it in the car on the real track.
Yeah, but, that's awesome. But then the thing is, like, when I have a shitty day at work, or you know, I have a tough time with my kids or something, I don't post about that on the internet.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody wants to know about it. And then when people, when I see people who do post these like ambiguous, mysterious things about like how it was like, I'm feeling sad today.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. The thing is, it's like, but yeah, there's an, there, we have, there, you know, there's, I think anybody can think of a person like that in their life. Yeah. And they're seeking attention for it. I get annoyed at that because, like, I don't want to know about that. I don't go on Facebook to see how sad people are, which, you know, maybe that's asshole-ish of me. But I feel like social media should be fun and communicative. But if you're having problems and social media is part of that problem, then maybe you need to remove that from your life or take a break from it or something, right?
See, I think that directly ties in with the first story of this comic, that In Our Eden. Again, I'm reading allegory into all over this motherfucker, but in that, I see him like, I see that as an allegory for like removing yourself from the technology of our current world. Like, and I know that's exactly what he did, but it's just like removing yourself from Facebook. Like, I have a friend named J Money who is not on Facebook by choice. He doesn't come to any of my events because all of my events get posted on Facebook. I don't know what's going on in his life because he doesn't post it on Facebook. Like, my friend J Money is the guy, is Adam from In Our Eden, is Daryl, who wants to have a better life by removing himself from these technology problems. But in the end, the people who are attached to that technology and want to use it will stay with the technology, and that person will just get left behind. And I think it was genius of Eleanor Davis to put that up front, because that In Our Eden ties into a whole bunch of all the other technology and people interacting. Like, that sets a really good stage for all the rest of these stories that come in. And, like, we kind of skipped over that one because Nita Goes Home, I think, was, like, so good. But In Our Eden I really liked, too. I think that was a good allegory.
Yeah, we see the perfect example of it. In one panel, Daryl says he's going to give up everything that was manufactured before, outside of their utopia, right? Yeah. And then immediately he is worse at archery.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's noble to a degree when people want to, like, stick it to the man or something, or disconnect. But the thing is like, you know, when some piece of technology, like Facebook, you know, it is a piece of technology, it's software, right?
Yeah.
When it becomes ubiquitous, there comes a point when it's hard to not be a part of those kinds of things. And you know, if you... The amount of time and energy you put into these kinds of things is entirely your choice. It's not Facebook's fault that it exists. Well, I mean, it's Facebook's fault that it exists, but it's your choice to utilize it in whatever way.
To be invested
possible.
In it. You're right. Like, yeah. There are people who emotionally vest in the things that they see and do on Facebook.
And sometimes, you know, sometimes I get a little jealous when I see people doing cool things that I'm not necessarily doing. But at the same time, you know, it's my choice to spend time looking for those kinds of things. But I'm not going to stop using Facebook because of it, because I want to be connected with... I want to be connected with my friends, and I want to know what's going on, you know? I want to know when game night is, or if there's a coupon for a track day or something. And, you know, Facebook provides all those things for me. And so you have to take the good with the bad, right? Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, I think, like, the Adam here, like, kind of exemplifies that, too. Like, he said, you know, it's kind of you... The technology is what you make of it, right? Like, you can use it to kind of show your best self and remind yourself of, like, what's good in your life, or you can, like, get jealous of other people. And you see it with Adam here, because it's like, he says, okay, we're out of society, we're good. And then he kicks out the guy stealing or buying candy bars. And then he's... You know, they go hunting, and he doesn't shoot as well, and he's like, oh, this technology is what's making me unhappy. And he keeps doing it and doing it. And finally he gets to this point where he's like, you know, he makes a choice. He goes, you know, it's not the stuff I'm doing. It's how ready I am to perceive it in the way I want to. Right? Like, he can take away all the vestiges of modern life, and it's not making him more happy until he decides that he wants to change his perspective.
Right.
That's exactly it. I could not think of a better way to sum up that story.
And see, like, both In Our Eden and Nita Goes Home are both about trying to find happiness. They're not showing us how to be happy. It's not like an instruction, right? It's not demonstrative. It's like, here is people going about happiness in different ways. There isn't a right answer. There's only the answer for you. Like, I have a doctor who talked to me about losing weight, and he said, David, do you know what the best weight loss program is? And I said, no. He said, it's whichever one works for you. There's no right answer. And that's true for being happy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that this graphic novel is a showcase of that. It's not supposed to show us... It's not a self-help book. I think it's like a reflection of society. It's like, hey, look at these people. These are, you know, maybe there's some hyperbole and there's some fantasy mixed into it, but it's like, this is how people are. We're all like this in certain degrees. So, you know, I think every story in this comic, you know, certain ones resonate with us more than others, but I think there's that they're all valid because they do speak to different people in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, we say we like this one or that one, and I'm sure if we ask enough people, there's going to be somebody out there who likes – everybody's going to have a favorite, and all of them are going to be – every story is going to be represented in that sample, right?
Mm-hmm. So let's keep going down the list. What do you
yeah,
guys think?
Sorry.
No, it's fine. And that's the thing, is there's so many different stories in here, and any one of them could lead you down like a rabbit hole. I think that's like one of the huge strengths of this book. So don't apologize for just chasing the rabbit on the discussion for one of these stories. That's going to happen. But what did you guys think of Sticks and Stones or Sticks and Strings? He can never stop playing ever again, or she will leave.
That was such a good vibe for me. I don't know why, because it's like totally unrelated. But when I was little, there was this kid's book that my mom always read to me, and it's a horror story. I think it's called like Taily Po, and it's about a hunter in the woods, and he eats some wild animal's tail, and then it like stalks him at night and kills his dogs.
That sounds familiar, actually.
It's
Maybe
like it's an old Southern folktale, I guess, and it was made into a children's book that, I don't know, was just around when we were growing up. But there was something just so, like, evocatively spooky about this that I loved. You know, like, this dude's stuck forever. But, I don't know, is it a bad thing? He asked her to come home with him. He seems happy playing for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
Again, I read some allegory in there. I read it in as like the capturing of exoticism. Like, there's this whole thing in our culture about idealizing the exotic beauty of the other. You know, like there's Stuff Mom Never Told You did a really, really good podcast about exoticism and how so much of our culture and sexualizing people and all this kind of stuff. It turns anybody who is not white into somebody who is exotic and then makes them something that you want to have. And this guy comes across something that is truly exotic for him, that is different for him. And he's enthralled by it, and he loves it, and he wants to take it home. Except he realizes that it's not exotic. It is what it is. And him taking it home, like, now it's home with you. She's home with you. And what you did to get her is not who you really are. And why she followed you isn't who she really is. Like, their interaction is just like, it's, you were caught in the moment and you really liked the way that this thing was, but that's not the way it always will be. I don't know. I'm not making sense there.
No, I really like that interpretation.
Okay.
I think
I'm not crazy.
Yeah, I think that's a strong analysis, Andy.
Yes. I'm not crazy. Thank you. What did you guys think of this one?
This is one that didn't seem to, it didn't really resonate that much with me. I don't really have much more to add to it than, you know, what, than your description to, of it, Andy, because I think your reading of it was really good.
Sweet. All right. What about the next one then? Darling, I've realized I don't love you.
Oh, God.
Let's have a baby.
See, this one is one that, this is going to sound bad, because, like, this one is one that did resonate with me, because it feels like, you know, I'm married and with kids, and I still love my wife, there's no doubt about that, but it's like, that's kind of, it's kind of terrifying, because I don't think that's going to happen to my relationship, and I hope it doesn't, but it's like this, it's a possibility, right? And so it's kind of terrifying for me to a certain degree.
And I think this is real for a lot of couples.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, people are married for, or together for some reason, and they look for reasons to stay together. And maybe that reason is having a baby, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are couples who get dogs, there are couples who have babies, there are couples who buy cars together because they want to find some new way to invest in their relationship. Like, these two people have this relationship in this comic, and the thing that brought them together isn't there anymore, so they don't have a reason to be invested in this relationship. And rather than just leave it, they come up with something new to just reinvest them, except it doesn't work. You know, like, at the end, there's two frames of the guy, and the guy's not reinvested at all. The guy's still just kind of standing there with the same blank look on his face as before, and now there's just a baby in the room. It, like, well, it doesn't fix the problems.
Both parents are have the same look on their face, and the thing is, they're not by having a baby, they're not really investing in one another. They're investing in this child, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
stay invested.
Again, this is I feel like an example of people looking for happiness.
Yeah. Well, and because we're told over and over that, like, being happy means being with somebody, and, you know, like, and you also get this thing, people with kids, like, will tell other people, you should have kids, it's great, it's wonderful. You know, like, there's this thing where, like, you believe that what you are doing, the situation you are in, is what makes you happy, so you want other people to be happy too.
Well, you want somebody else to be happy. You try to sell that situation because you want to validate your choice.
Oh, yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
But me, I will be one of the first people to tell, like, try to tell somebody how it is having a kid, you know? Or, like, another example in my life is I used to ride motorcycles, and people are attracted to motorcycles, right? People,
yeah, they're awesome.
Think they're awesome. But I will be the first, if somebody comes up to me like, David, I want to get a motorcycle, how do I do it? I will be the first person to tell them that it's really dangerous, and you really need to understand what you're getting yourself into. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. There's
real danger. I
remember
a bad accident you got in.
Yeah. There's real danger by making when you make a choice, there are always pros and cons to everything. And the key to being happy with your choice one of the keys is understanding the compromise you're making. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have it all. You can't be everywhere at once. And that's life. And so, you know, part of it's realizing it that, and then, and dealing with the choice you made in a healthy way. So, I don't know.
Yep. All right. Yep. The emotion room. This one really creeped me out.
Did it?
Dude, there was the one panel where, like, the just, like, black, like, tubes of emotion. Well, they're not tubes. Like, the black just, like, excretion of emotion was just, like, wiggling out of this person.
Mm-hmm.
That freaked me out a little bit. That was creepy.
Yeah, I think as
there's, like, something visceral to that I just did not
as an image, like, if you think of it as a thing that's actually happening to someone, yeah, that's definitely pretty disturbing. But, you know, it's a representation.
Yeah. Well, and even in terms of the representation, like, maybe it's because I am not the person who would go into this emotion room. You know, like, I'm a person, I feel like I'm more or less really emotionally stable, and that most of my emotions are positive and happy, or at least neutral, and I don't feel the need to just, like, push my emotions out and slough them away, you know? But I know people who do. I know people who think about their emotions as, like, a body part that they just really want to cut off, but know that they can't. And it's like, just to, I don't know, something about this comic made the idea of my emotions and my thoughts being like a physical, tangible thing that I could slough away. And that made me like really creeped out.
That's kind of funny because I don't, when I read this one, I didn't, my brain didn't focus on the emotion part. Like it just snapped to the orange slices. And I just sat there for like 5 minutes being like, what are the things that people eat orange slices for? And I was like, giving blood, running marathons. That's all I can think of. And it just, I don't know, there was something about, like, having that in the first and last panel that framed, like, the rest of it for me, where I'm sitting here and trying, like, to decide whether or not I wanted to try and make that kind of connection. And I think it's just supposed to be kind of like a little joke or something, like, you know, here's something refreshing that will make you feel better. But I just could not get the orange slices out of my head as a framing device, and it was strange for me.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned donating blood, because that's what I thought of too, because, you know, you go through this process that to some people is, you know, it's a painful process. You're getting stuck in the arm. And then you have a treat afterwards to like re-energize you. Like blood donations, like you said, oranges or little cookies or whatever. And, you know, I when I finished this story as well, I had to sit and think about what the oranges were supposed to represent, because, and I'm not really sure, like, what those are supposed to mean. You know, they're obviously not a throwaway image, but I don't have an answer about what the image is supposed to mean. But like you said, Janet, it's definitely an interesting framing device.
Yep.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, see, this is one of those comics where I feel like there isn't a wrong answer, and it's hard to argue with somebody else's interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, so listeners, yeah, this is kind of going to be a little bit rehashy and
that's emotional fruit. We'll get to one where I really have no idea either, but let's keep going in order. Next one was Seven Sacks with the rabbits and the ferryman. What do you guys think of this? I kind of like this one.
This, again, like, felt very evocative of some dark childhood story. But, you know, the more that we've been talking, I brought this one up at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, was like, I'm not certain how it fits in, but now I kind of see, I feel like he's just kind of trying to affirm to himself, yeah, it was rabbits.
Yeah, it was totally rabbits, definitely rabbits.
Not anything else, no children.
Nope, no children, no humans, just rabbits.
Just rabbits. I liked this, and oh, man, the big hairy one, the art for that was amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think from an art perspective, this one is definitely one of my favorites. But this one, I think, Andy, this one talks about and speaks to anxiety.
Yeah?
Yeah, I feel like he, this gentleman, the fairy guy, saw something that is making him anxious. And it keeps rolling, and the creatures that he's ferrying across the river are becoming more monstrous, right? And I think that is built, making his anxiety build, and he keeps trying to escape the situation. He as the final passenger arrives, he's ready to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, stop ferrying people across the river. And I think the anxiety is building on his face as we go through the story.
Yeah, and I think it's also this realization in his head that, like, the people carrying the sacks across the river are getting visibly shadier, but that doesn't mean that the first guy, who was presentable and nice, didn't also have a sack that had the same rabbits in it that everybody else did. And it's just like, no matter how nice or not nice looking the person in that ferry is, they all potentially could have been just as evil as the others.
Or only one of them could be evil. Maybe yeah. The first one did actually have rabbits. The second one had something malicious, and the rest were just people with sacks.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's that whole thing, like, you don't really know. There's not really any way to tell what the people around you are carrying with them. Like, and I mean that, like, literally and figuratively. Like, you don't know the baggage that people are carrying around with them just based on how they look. This guy's just a simple ferryman taking people across the river, and they look different, but they're all carrying bags, and he has no idea what's in them. And, like, there's something profound about that idea that, like, the first guy could have been the most evil because his was already all the way dead. I don't know. Just there's something about that that gets to me, and they're like, you, I sit on the bus in the morning. One of them could be a serial killer. I have no idea. It could be the nice guy.
like you said, you see these, you know, you see a lot of homeless people while you're traveling, and they, you know, I'd say sometimes homeless people look shady because they're unkempt or whatever, but they could be the nicest people in the world, and they're just down on their luck, you know? But there's no way to know because, you know, if you don't have any kind of meaningful experience with those people, you'll never know.
Yeah, and you're just a ferryman crossing through their life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but God, the fire in the distance, too. They're all dying. They're just burning everything in those sacks.
But maybe they're having a delicious rabbit roast.
You don't know.
Yeah, I guess. They could just be having a rabbit roast party.
Or the fire could have nothing to do with the other passengers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's just an assumption that we are making and that the ferryman's making, because the last passenger says, oh, they're getting started already. Who's they? Is it the other passengers? Maybe. They're just people with sacks. Right?
rabbits. Definitely rabbits. Like, yeah, there's definitely a creepy vibe to this one.
Yeah, and I think they're supposed to be. I think it really puts us in the, you know, it really puts us into the, like, the mind of the ferryman, yeah.
So, and then we already talked about the best self one, right? The pink one with the white statue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the make yourself strong one?
Oh, I like that. It was sweet.
Yeah. You know what? You know what else? Honestly, makes me feel that way when I watch Avatar, whether it's Last Airbender or Korra. I see them doing awesome things, and I'm like, I want to do awesome things. Like, I get that sense of, like, make yourself strong so you can help people. And it's like, that's what this guy does.
Just the last panel where he's just laughing.
Yeah.
It's so good.
This is we were shitting on CrossFit earlier. This is the one the CrossFit person will point to.
Hey, I wasn't shitting on CrossFit. I was just using an example.
I was shitting on CrossFit. Really, I don't need to see 10 Instagram pictures of that. I don't.
Wait. If someone does CrossFit and is vegan, which one do they talk about first?
I don't know.
Sorry, I had to. I also stole that joke. I'm just going to put that out there.
That's fine. Yeah, that one, the make yourself strong one, I think was really... And it was such a... It was in the perfect point in this comic... Or this graphic novel, because I needed that change of pace so drastically at this point. I was like, oh god, I don't know if I can keep reading this.
Yeah, it was brilliantly placed in this collection. Like, everything else is kind of doubt or questioning or, you know, not achieving who you really are. And then this one is just, like, really affirming. This guy's doing what he wants and he's clearly happy and he's making other people happy.
Yeah. Even if he's busting his ass to do it. Do it. Make yourself strong. And then it goes from this into Summer Snakes, and I have fucking no idea what to do with Summer Snakes in my head.
Neither do I. This is the one that tripped me the most. The art's beautiful.
Art's amazing.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what was going on in this one.
At first I was like, wow, that white girl is a bitch. And then they kissed, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Why did you feel that she was a bitch?
She seemed chill.
No, I don't know. I honestly can't remember now. I didn't like her when I was reading it. And then they kissed. And then I was like, well, maybe this is just about, like, teen apathy or something. I don't know.
Like, I'm not really sure what this one was trying to say, but it did remind me of certain things because, in points in my life, because I remember when my wife and I first started dating, we would watch movies on her MacBook in her bedroom, you know? So that was kind of, it reminded me of my life. I don't know. I'm not really sure what to do with this. Like when the movie paralleled the girl's, father, I was like, is her dad the actor or?
I wonder if it's like, you know, she implies her dad is some kind of spy. Like, you know, and they're, like, kissing in her room. Is it he, like, infiltrates the movie, like, magical realism style, and is, like, keeping an eye on them? Because that last panel where they're just eyeing the laptop, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I got nothing.
I don't know, but, oh, it's beautiful, I will say that.
Definitely.
All right. Thomas the Leader.
I feel like this is the most traditional, like, quote-unquote traditional comic of these.
Davey needs a friend who doesn't almost kill him multiple times a day.
Yeah. I feel like this one just belongs in someone's, like, childhood memoirs.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because when I was reading this, I was thinking, you know, this feels out of place on the one hand, because there's all this emotional stuff in this comic, and this one doesn't have an overt, like, emotional story kind of a thing to it. It doesn't call to mind a specific emotion immediately. But it does a really good job of capturing that feeling of, like, when boys are younger and the way that they play and the way that they have these, like, these awkward relationships with each other. One is in charge, one's the follower, and how being in charge, you feel like there's a weight to it, and how being the follower, you're constantly in, like, I don't know. There's something about this that did resonate with, like, boyhood in a way that most things don't, but it felt so awkward in the way that it did, too. I don't know. I couldn't get a singular thing away from this, but I definitely felt like it It definitely recalled things in me from when I was younger, but I can't figure out what things they were.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
I was just going to say, like, I feel like this one and the previous one are just kind of meant to be vaguely evocative. Like, they make you a bit nostalgic for something earlier in your life, but don't have to mean anything specific.
Maybe. Yeah. What are you, David?
Well, so I was going to say that I remember a kid in my childhood who reminds me of Thomas, who used to like to pretend like he was going to strangle people. Yeah. I don't know what happened to that kid. That was a long time ago. But I think what this... I don't know if this one has an emotion, like, in the way, like, Seven Sacks had, we think was about anxiety, right? But I think this one is about friendship and trying to get, and getting happiness out of relationships with, a relationship with somebody else as a friend. And I feel like maybe Davey, I don't know.
Like, Davey's just looking for a pal? I don't know.
I don't know that it's Dave. See, it's hard to say, like, if there's a main character. It's easy to say Thomas is the main character because we start with him, but then is Davey the main character because he is attached to Thomas, and Thomas is, like, abusive? Or is it about Thomas being attached to Davey and being abusive, but keeping his friend around, like an abusive relationship between, not a friendship relationship, but like a more intimate relationship, like a couple. And, you know, he, like Thomas is the abuser and he does this bad stuff to his friend, but then he realizes that he needs, that if he doesn't have this person that he's abusing, then he won't be happy. He won't have anything.
Huh.
I think you're spot on. I definitely think Thomas attaches to Davey, because Thomas wakes up and starts his day and goes to Davey and says, Davey, can you come out and play? And Davey's like, yeah, sure, whatever, I can play. Like, I don't think Davey needs Thomas, but I think Thomas needs Davey.
Right, and then at the end, you know, there's these tense panels of him with his knee on Davey's throat, and Davey's, like, struggling, and you know, Thomas lets him up and says, oh, I was just kidding, it was just a joke. But, and you know, it's Thomas trying to excuse him, his behavior. So, I think this one is pretty powerful. And I didn't get that necessarily when I read it. This is kind of something that I, like, looking at it again, something that's kind of come to the surface for me. There isn't, I don't think there's a clear narrative to this one. There is a side of the coin that, you know, it's two sides of the same coin, right? You could either resonate with Davey or with Thomas, and you can either be a person that's in Thomas's position or in Davey's position, or somebody seeing them from the outside. So I think there's a lot going on in this little story on an emotional level, and it's pretty deep. You know, thinking back, I think this one is definitely one of my favorites.
It's definitely one that changes the more you reflect on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's but the interesting thing about it is we're seeing two very young boys playing out. There's a situation happening in their relationship that could be shown. You can place the same emotions and stuff on a bigger, quote unquote, bigger situation, like a couple, right? An abusive partner in a relationship.
Yeah. And I think there's a very purposeful juxtaposition putting Thomas the leader after Summer Snakes. You get the stereotypical, quote unquote, friendship of two girls in Summer Snakes. Like, not typical. I'm not saying it really is typical, but there's that experience isn't supposed to be considered unique. And we get the same thing immediately after that with two boys and Thomas the leader of a strained and strange relationship that is not considered to be unique. And it's kind of like a whole bunch of this has been male-female couples, and then we get back-to-back same-gender couples. And it's really interesting juxtaposing them one right after the other, too. Anyway, then we get on to gluten-free. It's the way to be.
This one, I think, was pretty interesting. And this one, I to me, is very reflective of our time.
Yes.
Like, the time we live in. It's not... It's not timeless in the way that, like, Thomas the Leader is, you know?
No. No, but this is definitely kind of what I think when I go to Whole Foods, is like, why do people pay this much money for, like, the exact same food? And then I realize, oh, because they're looking for a thing to fix them, or to give them meaning, or to do something for them, more than what just the thing is supposed to do. Like, sure, this is food, and the food will give you sustenance, but this is gluten-free, and it'll do something more for you than regular food.
So, this resonated with me on multiple levels.
Eh?
And the first one is just like... So I read a lot of, like, food and lifestyle blogs. I love pretty pictures of what other people are eating or doing. Like, these, like, looking at them makes me happy. Mm-hmm. So, you very often see, like, this trend in food blogs of gluten-free. And, like, for instance, I have a good friend who actually has celiac disease, and, like, eating gluten makes him very ill. Huh. And, like, people just kind of assume, oh, it's a fad. But, so, yeah, of course, there are people who have this illness, but it's also caught on like wildfire. And I recently read something where someone was talking about, like, like, this blogger just wrote, I don't understand how people can be happy putting bad things into their bodies. And she's, like, doing Whole30, so no alcohol, no sugar, no legumes, you know, all this. And it's like,
legumes.
Dude, I ate, alcohol. Like, a fucking family-sized bag of Cheetos, and I feel great.
She was delicious.
Yeah, right, like, food serves various purposes, and of course you don't want to, like, gorge yourself and eat all the Cheetos in one sitting and then, you know, feel crappy. Like, that would make you feel crappy in multiple ways, I would imagine. But at the same time, like, a food product, a pill, a blah blah blah, insert the blank here, isn't going to fix your life or make you happy. And then the other part of that is, like, if so often, like, if you're ever struggling with something, people genuinely try to be helpful. But often that helpfulness turns into just like, have you tried this? And sometimes it's just like really wacky shit. Right?
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's range, like, the advice I've gotten through since, like, starting college has been like, have you tried kale? Have you tried cocaine? Like, neither to both of those.
Cocaine, you say?
Yeah. You know, so, like, I don't know, this one just, like, hit home because I see it so often in my personal life, in my internet life, like, there's always the new fill-in-the-blank of how can you be happy without this, and this will fix all your problems. And it goes back to, like, the very first story, like, with Adam, where he keeps cutting things out. Like, maybe he cut out wheat, too, I don't know, but it didn't make him happy. You know, it's about, like, I don't know, a mindset, and... Yes, your diet is part of a general mindset, but it's not going to fix your life. It just, it's a pet peeve of mine.
Well, yeah, and these people are, not just fix your life, but fix your problem. These people are using these lifestyle changes to try and fix real problems in their lives. Like, this woman has clinical depression. She should go to a fucking therapist and get therapy. And maybe get medication, maybe not. I don't know. That's her decision. But she needs to go to a fucking therapist. And instead, she's going to just try gluten. She's going to redirect that negative energy into making a lifestyle change that's not sustainable or at the very least won't solve a problem for more than a week, maybe a month. It's like, you can't substitute, you can't use these different fads to substitute a real problem that's in your life.
And maybe this thing does help people, right? And it's like David said earlier, you got to choose the thing that works for you. So, I don't know. I totally agree with you, Andy. I think, like, maybe there's no harm in trying, but just doing a bunch of different things isn't the same thing as finding the thing that works.
I am totally there. I'm totally in the you do you kind of thing, you know? Like, I'm all down for that. Like, of course, you do whatever you gotta do to make yourself happy, and that's wonderful. And if this woman wants to try gluten-free because she thinks it'll be nice, have fun. But also, go to a fucking therapist and fix your real problems. Like, and I really do. That's what I got out of this one. It's just like, what new fad are people going to use to try and circumvent or layer over or pave over the problems in your life, you know?
Yeah, it's... I don't know, it's just kind of the band-aid without the root of the problem. Like, gluten-free probably works great if you have digestive issues. Or a rash, I don't know. Like, I don't think that it works well if you, I don't know, have a fear of eels. Like, there are various logical things to try in every situation. And it's so easy to get caught up in one or the other. I don't know.
Anyway, next one. I don't know what to call it other than in 2006 I took a Greyhound from Georgia to Los Angeles. Which is the first line of the thing.
Oh, this is real life right here.
Yeah.
Bus travel is a thing.
Oof. I took a bus from Stuttgart to Barcelona once and it was one of the worst experiences of my life. I don't know why I didn't take a fucking train. Oh, because you can't take a train over the mountains that divide Spain and France. And anyway, I don't mean to sound all snooty, but that was horrible. I realized I just talked about like a cross-country Europe thing and sounded really snooty for a second, but no, that was horrendous. And that was almost the exact same experience as what's happening in Georgia to Los Angeles. It's just like all of these random fucking people being so loud. And you are so grateful for the one person who's just like, yeah, this is my life. You want a candy bar? Just like, can more people be normal like that dude? And then you realize, no, normal is all of these people together. That dude is maybe the outlier.
Well, everybody's definition of normal is varies, right?
Yeah. Came up last week. Kamala Khan, normal.
Yeah. And so, this one, I don't know. This one I feel like is kind of like a slice of life kind of thing.
Yeah.
Everybody's, you know, the people are annoyed by the different characters that we see on the bus, but their definition of happiness is maybe whatever it is that they're doing that you find annoying, right?
Yeah.
So
I also love, like, the random transcendent experience in the middle.
Yeah.
Where she looks out the window and
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that panel was very beautiful.
Yes, it was. Lovely, absolutely.
It really is, because I don't want to say this art style is really beautiful in places, but for the most part, it's pedestrian. Not in the sense that it's normal or average, but there's nothing about it that's flashy or stands out. But then, when Eleanor Davis wants to, she can do this, and it stands out, and it's just like, it, when I turned to that page, I just like was like, whoa, it made me pause.
It's a nice juxtaposition, because it's like, I don't know, have you ever seen the thing where people do the 24-hour comic sketches? Like, just these little quick doodles, basically, of what they're doing each hour of the day.
Well, no, I haven't seen that.
It's a neat thing. It's one of the few things I enjoy about Tumblr. And, it's just, like, the quick doodle there. And it just contrasts so nicely. You know, people are kind of amorphous in a lot of places. You can't always tell which characters are which, except for major defining features like, you know, a mustache or a specific shirt. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it's like beautiful, detailed rendering.
Yep. Okay, the next one. I had no good segue there. Next one was Skinning the Fox. What did you guys think
this
of this one?
This one was pretty upsetting.
Really?
Well, I've not been privy to skinning of any kind of animal. And so, you know, it was just very graphic to me in a way that I'm not used to seeing.
Not comfortable with?
It's not that I'm uncomfortable. I guess, yes, it's uncomfortable in that it's out of my comfort zone. But it's just something it's new to me, and it was not, you know, it was very graphic's probably the best way to describe it. It's like when you take off a latex glove, right?
Yeah, kind of. Only you peel the other way.
And I mean, that's how it's done, right? It's
yes.
And so, I mean, I eat meat, so I'm sure that many of the animals I eat were skinned in that exact way. And the leather in my shoe was peeled off of a cow or something. It's just, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't need to see it kind of thing.
Well, it's like when you're watching television or cartoons or something, the guy will shoot a bird the character will shoot a bird or shoot an animal, and they're like, oh, good, we got dinner tonight. And then cut to next scene, they're around the campfire, and it's just there getting cooked. Like, this part gets cut out always. Mm-hmm. Always. And I think for a reason. I think because it does do this to people.
I think Game of Thrones included, like, a rabbit skinning scene. Some people were like, ah.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, as somebody who grew up around hunters, this was just, yep.
Okay, well, so like, this...
Like, when I was a kid, I did a lot of fishing, right? So I know, like, gutting a fish
and cleaning it.
And scaling the fish and everything, that doesn't bother
me. That's not a mammal. That's a fundamentally different kind of animal.
But it's like you're still, like, I remember coming in from when we were deep sea fishing, you know, the deckhands are gutting the fish and throwing the offal off the side of the boat, and there would be seagulls following us because they are eating that stuff that is being thrown off. And it's just, I don't know, that's just, that doesn't bother me because I'm used to seeing it.
Hmm. Sorry, Jen, you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah, so I've seen, like, rabbits, weasels, or I guess minks, whatever the fuck, skinned squirrels. I have been to the, like, exhibits where they have, like, the human bodies with no skin. Like, gore or bodies or flesh don't trouble me in any way. But, and, like, when I still ate meat, I never had issues, like, pulling all the crap out of the chicken, that kind of stuff. But when I was reading this, my dog decided that it was time to get on the sofa and cuddle. And I kept trying to get her to go off, and she's just... And this is, like... This is my little baby puppy girl. Like, I love this dog so much, and she's just like, no, cuddle with me, cuddle with me. And I'm watching this fox, you know, get skinned, and I'm just like, oh, God.
Oh, that's too close, because they're both canines, too. That's way... Yeah, no, that would be weird to me, too.
No, but that's the thing. Like, because of that closeness, it was... Like, I couldn't help but see it in my mind's eye, and I was just like, I'm a barf. And it was just weird, because these things normally don't get to me, but then the moment you get, like, the emotional attachment, everything falls apart, and it's like, oh no, this is awful.
I think I know what you're talking about. I had a similar kind of thing about something. So, I was in a writing workshop years and years ago, and somebody had done a short story, and this person was overall a very mediocre writer. But what she did, she had, like, take your hand right now, right, and, like, just place your fingers on your arm and apply a little bit of pressure and just kind of drag your arm along. Not like you're scratching your arm, but just using your fingers and just that feeling of, like, your skin being tugged and, like, your skin wrinkling just in front of your, like, fingers as you drag it along. Like, this person had wrote a perfect description of that in, like, a horror scene. And it's something that, like, you just do. Like, you're just scratching, like, an itch. But it was written in such a way that it just, like, it made your skin crawl, even though it's a normal, everyday kind of thing. And I think even if you grow up around this kind of stuff, some of this description, some of the things in here give you that same feeling of, like, it could be something that's normal for you, or it's something that you're not made squeamish by immediately. But you just get that feeling of, like, just that little crawl up your back out of nowhere. Alright, last one. This one I'm excited about. This is one of my favorites. The No Tears, No Sorrow. I really, really like this one. Because I feel like this is so much of our daily lives, too. This, like, you need to feel more emotion. Okay, I felt emotion. Ah, but don't let it overwhelm you. I mean, come on, it's perspective. It's just a picture. But, like, yeah, so much of this one, I was just like, yes, oh my god, yes, oh. And then the woman at the end just crying. I'm like, that's why. Don't open yourself up emotionally. Fuck emotions.
Well, it's like, you know, these people clearly don't have what we would consider a normal or healthy balance.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, not being able to cry at your mother's death, like, you hear about that happening. And, you know, maybe that's part of a coping mechanism, but then to jump over that hurdle too soon and then find yourself, like, freaking out in a grocery store? That's also an unfortunate event.
Yeah. Like, at that point, you've opened up a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really have anything deep to say about this one, but I really liked it. And this is, if I was going to share any particular story out of this comic with another person, it would be the one with Nita and Mona and Michael, or it would be this one. It's dead on for what reality is in so many instances these days. I don't know, yeah. Alright. What did you guys think of this format? Last thing to talk about, with this whole short story thing. We don't get a lot of short story graphic novels.
No, we don't.
They're typically one long novel, right? I mean, yeah. That's why it's called a graphic novel. No, I thought this was a great... great use of this format. I don't think that certainly every comic shouldn't be this way, but I feel like this one certainly succeeds in its mission, because everything flows well. And like we talked about, placement of the stories in relation with the others, and there's a reason why this is probably on the best of 2014 lists, because it makes a choice about a format and uses it to great success.
Yeah, and it does the kind of things that great short story collections do. It juxtaposes stories together so that it enhances their individual meaning and it gives them meaning next to each other. Like the first two and the two with the two girls and the two boys, like it does all the things that a short story collection, a literary short story, not that this isn't literary, a written short story collection would do. This does all of the same things just as right. Except it gets to sprinkle in, like, little pages, like the handful of people that balled themselves up. Like, I don't know what that was, but I like it. There's, like, little doodles in here, too, like that. They just, like, are neat and change things up and... I don't know what to make of them all, but they're nice, and I'm happy that this is a format where they can just kind of get peppered in and have it not be a thing. Anyway, you guys want to rate? Let's rate. We're running super long. Jen, you rate first.
So at first, you could say I was anxious about how I wanted to rate this, but yeah, that was a terrible joke. Sorry. I'm giving this a 5. I thought that. Well, if you had asked me, I would, without knowing, have assumed this was a collection of different authors and different artists. And to see this, I mean, I'm not wrong in saying it's all Eleanor Davis, right? Like, she did this whole dang thing. I think that it requires some very special skills to do short stories well. And this collection has a wonderful balance of versatility and cohesiveness. You know, like, the pacing is great. The way the stories fit together feels very balanced, like, on an emotional level, where it takes you, like, through tension and doubt, and then, like, there's these nice little happy or even funny moments. I just, like, after talking about this and how much we could delve into it, I thought it was wonderful, and I just loved the art. You know, I think it's amazing that this person can transition so smoothly from, like, these little, very abstract doodles into, like, just gorgeous color work. And, man, I was blown away. This exceeded, you know, all my expectations, and I loved it.
All right. I'm going to go next. I'm also going to give it a 5. Like I said before, I don't know if it's... if I think this is a great novel, or if this is frou-frou emotional crap. And I still don't know if this is just frou-frou emotional crap. But, at the very least, I can say almost every story in this you can read, and you can reflect upon, and it opens you up to some thought, or some emotion, or some memory. And if it doesn't open you up, it opens up a great discussion. Like, before we started recording, we kept wanting to start talking about this before we were recording. Like, we just kept, like, I want to say, oh, wait, no, I'll save it. I want to save it. Like, this comic just begs you to talk about it, because it just does such a good job of showing you something within you that you feel and opening it up for inspection. And not a lot of literature does that really well. And this, like, nails that thing. And for that alone, I'm giving this a 5. So 5. Because 5. David?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that I'm definitely going to give it a 5 as well. this comic, this graphic novel, it's relevant, but it's resonant. And I think maybe not every story will resonate with every reader, but they all, like Andy said, they're evocative in their own ways. And I think they're going to be evocative for each reader in a different way. But, you know, this graphic novel is like nothing I've read before. It's a collection of short stories, like we said before, but it takes it full advantage of the comic medium, and then uses it in ways that are different and create very, very creative. And I feel, you know, I looked up Eleanor Davis after I finished reading it to see who she was, and it turns out she's like the same age as we are, and I think maybe that's why it resonates strongly. I don't want to put words in your guys' mouth, but it resonated strongly with me, and it's because I'm of the same generation. I feel like there are situations, I've been in situations in my life that are reflective of stuff that happened to the characters in this story. So, I just thought it was great. It's really well done and deserving of all the accolades that it's received. So I'm no doubt, like, without hesitation, giving this a 5. It was really a great piece of art.
All right. We're running super long. I made us all brainstorm a Fight Night in the beginning, but we don't have time for it. We're just going to skip it this week. We'll do Fight Night next week. That's it for this week. If you want to support more awesome shows like this one, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics or audibletrial.com/welcometocomics. I know you like listening to people talk, because you just listen to us talk for well over an hour. So audibletrial.com/welcometocomics, you get a free audiobook, and we get a little bit of a kickback. Everybody wins! Yay! Next week, we're going to read Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, which is a perfect title after this one. So much of this was just, like, uncomfortable emotions and talking about them. And next week will be too, but at least the title is Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant. That's written by Roz Chast. I'm excited for that one, but until then, goodbye, everybody!
Goodbye!
Goodbye!
Yeah!